This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for listening. I like that word, listening. That's our mission this week, listening. After all of the surprises, listening perhaps makes the most sense. Listening, for instance, to a voice of an American whose idea of America is not something you would normally hear in a public radio pledge drive, say.
Now, if you're going to go down the road of 100% racial purity, that's ridiculous. No country has that. But a country needs to have at least a high percentage, like 80 or historically in the United States, 90% a white Christian heritage. And that's what our country was. And that's what's changing.
Or listening, as we will this hour, to a mom trying to explain to her kids that it's still okay to be Muslim in America.
Her little face crumpled up. And I was like, are you sad? And she said, yeah, mama. And she cried, and she cried, and she called into my lap. And so we talked, and we talked about the fact that even if he's president, there's a lot of laws and regulations. We talked about the fact that there's a Senate and a Congress.
Or listening to a Democratic congresswoman who heard the discontentment in the northern industrial states, but nobody heeded her warnings.
I go to the bars. I'm in those union halls. That is what I do every weekend. People say I do too much. I don't do too much. I want to know what people are thinking. And if you're listening to people, you know what was in their heart.
We will hear more from all three of those people later this hour. You'll be fascinated by their identities. It's not exactly his style, but if there is someone who could credibly say, I told you so, in response to the Trump victory this week, he would never do that. But it would be New Yorker writer George Packer.
There is a sort of rigging of the game against people who don't have access, who don't have the right connections, and who don't know how to play the system.
George Packer was saying that back in 2013. Packer was talking about his award-winning book, The Unwinding. It's the story of the deindustrialized void in rural America and the faces and people who had lost faith in institutions. And as he told us today, we're looking for a political home. Well, George Packer says, they found one on Tuesday.
I was in Western North Carolina. I was in Youngstown, Ohio, Tampa Bay, all places that were hotly contested and that became part of Trump's victory. And what I saw was a sense of utter disconnection from power, from the people making decisions, whether in Washington or in New York, in the media, in business, technology, and especially government, and a resentment, a sense of you've forgotten about us. We don't count anymore. Our way of life doesn't seem to matter. We used to be the heartland. Now we have, you know, opioids and people on disability, and we're sinking, and people are blaming us for it. So there was a lot of an undercurrent of anger and resentment and even despair that found its voice in Trump. And so to me, his emergence was not a surprise. His victory was, but that's another story.
As you traveled the country and spoke with people who felt forgotten, what did you think the political opportunity was for either party? And what did you think was the natural political home of these people should their collective anger find expression in an election? And again, you know, while we're talking some years ago.
Well, this was during the recession. And race had something to do with this for sure. I mean, there was a reaction against our first black president that animated some of the people I wrote about, not all of them. And there was an economic factor. And there was just a kind of collapse of, I don't know, to sound a bit 19th century about it, a collapse of standards, as if, you know, well, if the elites are going to misbehave, then why should we try to do any better? And let's all sink to the lowest level of our trash pop culture. That was a strong feeling I had, and Trump is a creature of that. There was no natural political home, John. That's what I came away feeling, was that the Republicans were too pro-business. Because there was a lot of anger at corporations leaving the country and at tax breaks and free trade and also at immigrants being used to take jobs that may or may not have been once taken by these people. The Democrats were too collectivist and too pro-government. So neither party really had an answer. And this year we've seen in succession the establishment of each party repudiated. First, Trump represented a rebuke to the Republican establishment, a middle finger to it. Sanders represented something slightly less vitriolic to the Democrats. And now Trump's victory is a kind of FU to both party establishments. And I think we can't underestimate the pure sort of nihilistic, I just want to smash things message that was sent on Election Day. I don't think it had a particularly well-formed ideology. I think it was a gesture and a lashing out.
How much time do you think the new president has to deliver some, you know, message back to Trump land that, you know, help is on the way?
If it's a matter of, you know, getting us out of trade deals and suddenly miraculously steel jobs, coal jobs, manufacturing all come back to Western Pennsylvania, West Virginia, northeastern Ohio, I don't think that's going to happen. And I think there's going to be a severe disillusionment. But Trump is a master at the rhetorical side of politics, and he sort of represents a direct line of connection without any intermediaries to his supporters. And as long as he can speak for them and to them in a way that is satisfying and resonant for them, they will continue to support him. I think it could take a while for facts to sink in, because a lot of facts didn't sink in during this election campaign. We seem to be in a new era where facts are trivial matters compared to feelings, gestures, and rhetoric.
Is there a rewinding of some of these communities in some coherent way? Okay, we're not going to snap our fingers, cancel the trade deal, and the factories are going to come back. But is there some way to coherently, intelligently, slowly reverse what's been unwound?
Two things. First, part of what I meant by the unwinding was the collapse of institutions, not just of communities, but of institutions, including our own, John, including the press, as a healthy, viable force in a democracy. Those institutions look weaker than ever today. And so that is a really long, difficult process. And it requires a public engagement and a public belief, like an end to this distrust and cynicism. How does that happen? Well, maybe there has to be some generational change. Maybe it takes 30 years. As for the communities that I was in, you know, the economy has improved in all of them, but marginally. And after years and years of decline, people don't believe it or it's not enough. If that continues, then sure, there can be economic comebacks, and with it, some kind of re-knitting of the social fabric and some kind of a revival. But the trust in institutions and in leaders is the real nub of the matter. And Trump swept all that aside by saying, don't trust any of them. You can't trust the media. You can't trust the election system. Trust me. And that puts a lot on his shoulders. Maybe feeling it a bit these days now that he's actually caught the truck. But on the other hand, it also gives him tremendous power, because there's something, you know, he's the direct expression of this political tendency now. There's no political party in between him and it. So he has the populist demagogue's authority right now, and he could do a lot with it.
What would you change about our electoral system based on the result this week?
Well, a lot of people I'm talking to wish there were no such thing as the Electoral College, which is an odd, antiquated thing out of the Constitution that doesn't seem to serve any purpose except to every now and then, every 20 years, deny the majority its will in a presidential election. I don't think the electoral system needs to be changed except for money. And money was not the issue this year.
No.
It was not the Koch brothers' years. It was not the super PAC's years. Jeb Bush, you know, had what, $100 million in the super PAC that couldn't begin to lift him up. The problem, isn't so much the campaign finance system right now, although that's a perennial problem. The urgent problem is the utter distrust of so many Americans for the normal functionings of democracy, for the normal functionings of the press, for the normal functionings of elections, which we were told were going to be rigged, and for the, you know, the normal functionings of Congress, which now look, you know, after years and years, look like it's meant to achieve nothing, to simply kill everything that comes along. So there's a lot of corrosion in these democratic institutions. That's what I keep coming back to, and that's what The Unwinding is really about, even though it's the story of individuals in America.
Is the trust restorable?
Well, it has to be. I mean, that's a statement of faith, not of I don't have a practical plan. I try to avoid punditry as much as possible, although I don't always succeed. It has to be, because that's what this country is about. And that I'm really torn today, John, because on the one hand, I hate what happened on Election Day, and I dread what's to come. I had a very hard time talking to my children the next morning and telling them that, you know, everything will be okay. I couldn't actually tell them that. But on the other hand, you know, half the country has spoken. John Dos Passos once wrote, "All right, we are two nations," in his great USA trilogy. And I feel that. We are two nations. That bothers me as much as anything. How do we become one nation again? Do we give the other side a chance when they didn't give Barack Obama a chance? Is that a sucker's game? I'm really torn, because I want there to be a revival of faith in democracy, but I don't see how it can happen when it's a street fight in a pitched battle and seems to keep spiraling downward.
George Packer is a staff writer at The New Yorker and author of The Unwinding, an Inner History of the New America. George, always great to talk to you.
You too, John. Thanks.
I'm David Remnick, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.